roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Las Vegas, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show. The only show that matters. I'm George. That's Goz. Let's dispense with the formalities here. We've been doing this for a long time. We are going to recap UFC on ESPN 12. Spend a little time on that main event, faux show. Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. An epic fight, one for the ages. Goz, it's got to be up there for a fight of the year, right?
I feel as if maybe 10 years from now we'll probably still be talking about this fight.
Yeah, it was that damn special, good. For sure, man. That lightweight division is just cracking. And so we'll talk about each guy and what might be next for them. Of course, we'll go over the main card prelims, you know, the new stars that may have come out of that, the veterans that still got it, the bonuses. We got it all for you here, folks. On a Sunday night, it's MMA Junkie Radio, late style. So buckle up. Here we go.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Steven Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Goz. So this is the last fight card in Las Vegas for a bit. Not too much, but as we all know, this next Saturday is Independence Day. So the UFC's never really gone up against the red, white, and blue. And they are going to defer and wait till the 11th. That's what would have been International Fight Week here in Las Vegas if we hadn't had COVID-19. We would have had the World MMA Awards. We would have had the Hall of Fame. We would have had maybe even sometimes they do a double whammy, you know, like a tough finale. In this case, it'd be like a fight night and then the UFC 251 card. But, of course, COVID-19 did happen. It's still happening. And as we always tell you, be safe out there, folks. Wear your mask. But the UFC has not stopped. That train now heads over to, well, that's a dumb thing to say because they're crossing the ocean. So the train gets to Florida somewhere, and then it becomes a ship that heads over to Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. So starting on the 11th all the way to the 25th, there's four fight cards in 15 days. The 11th, the 15th, the 18th, and the 25th. So three Saturdays and one Wednesday. There's, let me think, four title fights, three alone on UFC 251. Welterweight, featherweight, and the vacant bantamweight.
I don't like when they do that.
That following Saturday is the vacant flyweight. Three, you don't like three and one?
I think two is good enough. Three is a little bit too much. I'd rather them spread it out over a couple cards.
Well, they do have UFC 252 right around the Kona. So you're saying Miocic and Cormier could have used a little bit of backup over there.
Why not?
I think maybe it was just the strategy of, well, let's take a look here. You got Usman versus Gilbert Burns. Those guys are both based in America. They really could have had it in North America. Okay, then we got Alex Volkanovski against Holloway. Okay, that one's got to be done there because of Volkanovski. He's Australian. And then we have the vacant... Oh, wait, excuse me. We have, the vacant bantamweight, which is Aldo versus Peter Yan. So that makes sense. So really, they could have said, hey, Usman, you and Burnsy, just fight the following month in August on the same one that they have planned. But remember we said Miocic and Cormier might also have Valentina and JoJo? Because remember, I mean, look, I'm not saying Valentina dictates all of her terms, but I remember her saying in August she could fight. So who knows? I mean, the last card was headlined by Amanda Nunes and against Felicia Spencer. It was only one title fight. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's the UFC's way of making it up to us, maybe?
I guess. I don't know. Threes always seem like it's overkill for me. But where do you stand on the whole Peter Yan? Are you one of those guys that's going to start saying Petro or whatever? Yan. I've heard so many different ones. Or are we just going to say, man, he's Peter Yan?
He's Peter Yan.
I think I'm Peter Yan, too. And I think I'm doing it just to be a dick. Only because the other guys are going so far over Petro the top Yan. To say it that way.
Is John Anik leading the way there?
Yeah, but that's John.
See, he's the coolest dude ever.
He
so if he wants to do it, then I'm like, go ahead, John, you know. And if he wants to flame me like he did, he flamed me for Max Roscoff. I say Rosh. I kind of flipped the S and the H. Max Roscoff. Now, I could have sit there and said, John, I was in a fucking sauna. Get off my back. But I just took it because I love that guy. I respect that guy. He's awesome, right? But.
Plus, nobody knew who he was back then.
The other day. Well, we did, though. The other day, Justin James won. All right. I'm almost positive John called him Jesse James. Jesse James.
John Morgan?
No, John Anik.
Oh, John Anik?
Yeah. So John Anik has the benefit of, you know, when those guys fly in? Here's the things they do.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's your weight? If the new guy, Tony Barbosa's like Bert, the first thing they want to do is check your weight, see how you're doing. Then here's your envelopes for you and your cornermen. I think it all goes to the fighter. And that's actually going to be important. We'll discuss that in just a sec. I think they get, I think it's $500 for the team, maybe. So then you use that to scoop up meals and pay for your corner. Now, your corner's already got their room paid for and the flight. One guy. But you're allowed to bring two. So I think one of them has to come out of your pocket. Now, some guys may actually negotiate it in their contract. Who knows?
Maybe they split a room.
Maybe. I've seen that yeah, for sure. The corners will split the room and then the other guys will, you know, do whatever. But I believe they get $500. I could ask. I don't think that's that big of a deal to ask that question.
I thought it was $150 a day.
$150. Oh, wow. That's good then.
I thought maybe it's
$150 a day. So that's for each guy or just,
no, just for the team? Team.
And I know they're here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So that's 5 days. So that's $750. Okay. Could be. That's not too far off. But anyway, so then you get that. Then you sign posters. And then I think you might shadow box. And I think you answer the UFC's, you know, those interviews where they tell you what you're going to do.
The little lights and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I think you go to the Reebok stand or whatever it's called. And you say, I'm a medium and my gloves are a large. And then they give you your kit, your jackets, the bags, all that shit. And then I think you might even have the name of the gourmet chef or the PI people that say, what are you eating? Or
trifecta guys or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. You want chicken. You want, you know, veggies, whatever. So all that's done on Tuesday. Why am I even going down this road? All that's done on Tuesday.
Because of the money.
Let's circle
why
back.
Why was here. The money important?
Well, the money's going to be important in just a second, and that's kind of like a dumb little side joke I got. But
it was very important to let people know why they do something, and it's because they arrive on the first day and this. What the fuck?
I don't know. Now it's bugging me. And I'm willing to take the whole episode to remember
too. Where are we going with this stuff?
Usman, Burns, Valentina, Petra JoJo, Yan. Petra Yan. Yeah, John Anik.
Hold on. John Anik.
Justin James.
Well, still because John Anik has the liberty. That's one of the first things is they sit down and talk.
So then
about.
They actually have a microphone or something like that. I guess they go into a little booth and they say, you're supposed to say how you would like the announcers to say your name. Now, Bisping and Cruz, I'm picking those two because they accompanied John this past weekend. The other guys, I don't think it's as big of a deal. The play-by-play guy, that's their deal. And Mauro Ranallo was meticulous about this. Ariel Helwani once said that he's meticulous because that's something he got from fellow Canadian Mauro Ranallo, who obsessed over it. John Anik is also somebody who did this. And I'm not sure if John does it because of Mauro, because John, you know, he did boxing for a while and then he came over to MMA. It's just something that is he's obsessed with. So he'll tell you, like, Jiří Procházka or Joanna Jon Jacek, you know, whatever. Fedor Yelimelenko. Remember that Russian lady? Mm. We're all saying Fedor Yelimelenko.
She said Fedor Yelimelenko. But she said it in front of him.
Though. I thought I heard it another time where they kind of like started saying it like her, and I was like, oh, kudos to the lady 10 years ago.
All right, brief sidebar. We interviewed Fedor in our hotel room a long time ago.
Yes.
He had a translator. The translator, I think George said his name, and then he said, hey, it did pretty good, right? And she's like, well, actually, this is how you say it. And it blew our minds away because it sounded nothing like
Fyodor what we were Yelimelenko.
Something like that, right? So we thought we were badasses. We were saying that for a long time. But I have never heard anybody else say it that way. Now, she said that right in front of his face. Mm-hmm. So I imagine if you're saying my name in a different language and you said, Brojón García, I'd probably go, oh, he's trying to say my name. He's fucking that up. I'd go, no, Brian García, right? He didn't do that. He rolled with the punches. So I imagine what she said is how his name should be pronounced.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. He didn't wince. I mean, he didn't raise an eyebrow. And so those guys record something. And so then when John has all his notes together, he listens to that. And then on Saturday, he goes off and pronounces it. Now, he said Jesse James, just because I think in the heat of the moment, dude, that dude's doing a lot. He's calling play by play. And then he's being spoken to, I'm sure, by a producer. And then, of course, if there's a crazy knockout like Justin Jane, one of his go-to is to say the guy's name. He'll go, oh, Justin Jane. He collects himself, and then that allows him to go, what a beautiful head kick KO, or what a, you know, what a this or what a that or whatever. But that's his deal. So then he's got to come down from that, explain, you know, the round, the time, and maybe go over the replay. And then I think he steps off to the side, or maybe he does it from his little stand there, and then, you know, how they talk to him. So do you recall when we were at City of Commerce and I was calling play-by-play? Bama, yeah. I was either play-by-play or I was color commentator with you, and RJ Clifford was play-by-play. I don't remember. No, if RJ was there, he would have done it. Do you remember when I had to leave and then walk down the ramp and go announce the guy, which I wasn't told I was going to do? But I did it. As I was walking down the ramp, I must have said the guy's name about 50 times in my head because I was scared that at the end I'd go, all right, everybody, put your hands together for
this guy.
Yeah. My man here, you know, or whatever. Uh-huh. So I think one of them was Christian Aguilera, actually. Uh-huh. I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And I don't know who the other one was. So it wasn't too bad, you know. But I didn't want to say, like, Conrad Aguilera or something.
If you didn't remember and had a blank look on your face, I would do this to you.
That's Christine Aguilera?
Yeah, and hope it. You'd think
I would know, okay, that that's Christine maybe. Aguilera.
Well, how'd you guess it now?
Well, because it's so close that I imagine she did something like that.
Yeah, that's Ghost, the only thing I could think of. It would be followed by this face.
The Bossa Nova or something. I don't know what he was doing. But I would say, put your hands together for my man right here, the big winner. Yeah. I don't know.
Because this was a genie in a bottle, right? Isn't that what she's trying to do?
Oh,
was
she?
She's like a little genie. Yeah,
I wouldn't remember
bottle.
That. Yeah. So, and then even if I was John Anik and I said, hey, you guys got those recordings for me? And they go, here you go. And I heard it over and over. I think come Saturday, I'd still fumble it.
Me too.
So he I think, just was in so much of a hurry that he just slipped. But I'm almost positive he said Jesse James. So the next time we have him on, and he once told me, he goes, don't ever ask me if I want to do the show. Just tell me when. I'll do you guys anytime. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good idea to get him on before he goes to Yaz Island. And then spring it on him somehow and see if he laughs it off. Now, see, if I would have went on Twitter, I would have been a little twat. If I would have said, hey, bitch, what happened to Max Rod? Right. So I'm just kind of going to save it and then spring it on him and maybe have a good laugh. But all right. So I'll just get the joke out of the way because then I'll forget it. And then we'll get to the card, folks. Sorry for all the goofing off here. Mike Perry. Yeah, I tweeted this guy. He actually won his fight and he gets to pocket all that per diem money because it was just him and his lady. You know what I mean? So it was just a little joke. Like, if that amounts to 750, that's a nice little 750 bonus that he didn't have to share with anybody. Because he actually pulled it off. He won a fight with just his girlfriend and Don House. You know, he was doing the corner work, and the girl just put the ice pack. Did you watch?
Yeah.
Did you hear and all that?
I heard when she said,
"Where do you want the
ice pack? You're doing good. You're doing great, or looking good, or something like that."
Yeah.
Then one time he asked her, "What's my hair look like?" Or something.
He
like
did. That. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I thought he did that. Like,
at the end of the second round. I think she said, "Where do you want the ice pack?" And he goes, "Just the back of my head."
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved over to the other side. And you know, on the one hand goes. I want to say, I wonder if the UFC's like, get him a fucking corner, man. We look like a fucking circus right now on ESPN. But it became such a big story. And this guy's got a little bit of, you know, he's like the Diaz brothers. He's like Masvidal. He, you know, these street tough guys, they kind of roll to the beat of their own drum. That could be that what makes them unique. It was something for them to talk about. But then on the other end, it's like, will we ever be taken as a real sport if bullshit like that's taking place? You know what I mean? When in boxing have you seen just one guy come out with his lady? I remember Broner got brushed by his lady, but that was at the end of the fight. He had a proper corner. You know, this is a serious deal. You know, like, this guy is trying to say, hey, I'm one of the top welterweights in the world. And I'm going to give him praise when we talk about his fight in a second. He out-grappled Gall at many times. Mm-hmm. And Gall was supposed to be the... You know, the classic grappler versus the striker. You know, as long as it's on the feet, Perry's going to light him up. As long as it's on the ground, watch out for Gall. And I'll also give credit to Mickey Gall. Early in the first round, he started doing real good with his striking. So anyway, but all that put together, you know, I don't know. If I'm running the UFC, I might tell him, hey, man, I appreciate what you're doing. I see you're in the middle of camps or something, but I'll even send Forrest Griffin down there. To walk you down. He can walk you down. He'll go out there. He'll just tell you a couple basic things. But we're not going to have, you know, this little situation here. Now, I say that without knowing if that young lady is just some beast that we don't know about. I mean, Sam Alvey's wife, I have no problem with her jumping in. She gives great advice and she game plans and all that. Yeah, yeah. It's not anything to do with that. And it's not anything to do with the significant other angle. But. It was kind of funny to me, and I just wonder if the UFC winds up losing more than gaining more.
I think you gave two good arguments, both sides. There's a little piece of me I think that the UFC doesn't like when like coaches get a lot of shine or managers or stuff like that. So I think
sometimes they don't even live down the CM Punk thing.
Yeah. True.
You know, so I don't know. And he actually gave a proper camp, had proper coaches, you know, and who knows. All right. So let's just get to the main event and then we'll go downward. Talk about Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. These guys went the distance. And you know what? It really did sway a little bit. Dude, Dan Hooker was putting it on Dustin Poirier in round two. I saw Dustin Poirier taking some deep breaths in between rounds two and three. He comes out. And I thought, okay, not only has Hooker got the momentum, Poirier's like, you know, he's not gassing, but, you know, he just looks, his energy bar looks like it's far, you know, further down, closer to empty than Hooker. But I'm also talking to myself and going, but he's done five rounds before. He's been in these big fights. He knows how to manage his output. And then, sure enough, things started to turn.
But that looked like the beginning of a fighter possibly starting to break on the big stage. You know, he's been on the big stage before. Hooker was just beating him to the punch a lot. It just seemed like it almost seemed like one of those where if I had money on Poirier, I'd be saying, this is just not going to be my night. It's not going to go my way. But then somehow he dug deep and got that second wind. He started throwing he started to find his range a little bit more. And then it was Hooker that seemed like he was getting a little tired. And then there was a few times where it seemed like Hooker was just a little lackadaisical. It was really weird. Like around round four, there were times where I felt like, I don't want to say he wasn't taking it serious, but he was just kind of like chilling. It was the weirdest thing. I don't know how to describe it, but
he stopped leg kicking, Dustin. Mm-hmm. That was one thing. And two, Hooker had some beautiful body shots.
Oh,
and I don't know why he got away from him, you know, because I thought
it's what hurt him early on, I think.
And then it opened up the head. And there was a one point where all you could hear was like that sound, you know, just things, these guys connecting. And, you know, it was bone on flesh and slap and break and crack and this and that. I mean, like, on the one hand, it was a thing of beauty if you're watching the techniques and their heart and the show they're putting on. And then on the other end, I'm like, oh, man, they're jacking each other up, you know?
Lots of kicks got checked, too. I don't know how they could stand. I mean, you see Dustin after the fight. He was limping really bad. But there were a couple where it was like shin on knee. It was horrible, dude. It was really, really horrible. Like, that's one of the fights where our mom says it all the time because she's our mom. But there's times where she looks at the TV and goes, I don't know how you guys can even like this and be like my kids and be sweet after this. And then you watch this and you guys just turn into these barbarians. Man, she's fucking right. I was watching that. There were times where I was kind of like, oh, man, like, this is a brutal ass sport, dude. Their faces were changing in front of us.
Did you see Hooker when we saw him at the studio? I mean, you know, he's a good looking fella. You know what I mean? You know, obviously in shape, lean, 155, probably walks around at 170. You see him at the end of the fight?
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like Clay from Sons of Anarchy.
Car accident or something.
His face totally changed, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, man. Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, he just totally, and then Dustin's eyes, man, like, seriously, folks, let me put it to you like this. Most of us obviously don't even come close to walking into a cage. So, yeah, I guess I can use the basketball, football analogy, but that's different. I mean, just like, look, have you ever put your girlfriend on your shoulders and chicken fight versus another couple in the pool? You do it for a little while or whatever, and then, you know, obviously you just get a little bit tired. I remember sometimes pillow fighting or I don't know, like jumping rope. You can do that for like a minute and 20 seconds, and then you start heavy breathing. Just watch a street fight on YouTube. They'll sock each other up, and then sometimes you'll be like, yo, man, give me a sec here, you know? They're catching each other's breath, and they're actually thin kids, you know, that are going out. That is not easy to do, man. And they were just, I mean, literally tagging each other.
You know what I kept thinking about as that was going on, especially when Dustin was turning the tide a little bit? I kept thinking, how good is Khabib if he dominated Dustin Poirier? And Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker, the guys that they've gone through, if you look at their Tapology or their Sure Dog, and they're beating the crap out of each other, like, how good is Khabib? Like, to know one skill set that good in wrestling and to be able to nullify other fighters to avoid damage like that, those types of fights, that's a crazy skill set, man.
So he's relentless with his wrestling and his ground and pound. One thing I noticed about Dustin, and to be fair, I want to ask him this, I know we'll have him on the show this week, I'm fairly confident, is that hip injury that he keeps talking about. You notice he goes down for that guillotine a lot. And look, he came close on Khabib once, and on Hooker it looked pretty tight. But a lot of people will tell you, hey, use your wrestling to stop the takedown from even happening. But I've noticed Dustin somehow looks just a little stiff. And so rather than maybe sprawling or using underhooks and just good footwork, sometimes he'll either just pull guard or just get taken down easy. And remember, he's been in the sport for a long time, and I'm sure he's probably worked on his wrestling for a while, but I just wonder if that's just maybe something that he'll have to live with. Like, he just doesn't have, like, the best hips or whatever to
I know to when you have a hip that. Injury, I mean, when they, like, I know we joke all the time about Marty Crane from Frasier with his hip, but I heard it's like that. Like, even when it gets cold and stuff like that, you just can't move it. It's one of those parts of your bodies that when it starts to go, it's like, that's the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I want to ask him about this. You know, he had the hip surgery and he says he's good, but I wonder if it's something that, you know, that's just something that he'll struggle with. So to answer your question, Khabib is awesome. Two, he commits to his craft, which is, it all starts with the wrestling. But maybe Justin Gaethje can present a formidable challenge because he used to wrestle. And if he's immersing himself in just wrestling, you know, these next few months until he fights Khabib, which I hope he does, because stop the takedown, you know what I mean? And keep it standing. And even though Khabib's striking's improved, he's not going to catch Justin. And if you think about it, Dustin beat Justin. So it just has to do with the matchup, man, the skill set versus skill set. But yeah, I mean, Khabib's legit. All right, so Dustin and Hooker, they put one on for the ages. You know, we just had fucking, I still can't get over Burgos and Emmett. That was crazy. And then, of course, Joanna and Zhang Weili. That was crazy. Like, that's just three off the top of my head, but there's been some good fights this year so far. Dustin Poirier wins the decision 48-47, 48-47, 48-46. I thought it was basically 2-2 going into the fifth. Except Dustin looked stronger going into the fifth. And so he won that championship round. And it looks like on the judges' scorecards that made the difference. So that's how close Hooker obviously came to winning as well. Now, what happens next? All right. Well, Khabib versus Justin looks set. People keep talking about Dustin versus Tony. Now, some old schoolers like myself will go, well, wait a minute. That's a guy coming off a loss versus a guy coming off a win. But Ferguson hasn't lost in 8 years, so his stock is at an all-time high no matter what.
I have an answer to that. And that's very easy.
Yeah, just do
one
it.
One guy dropped and one guy went up, and they just met right there. That's how you have to look at it.
That would be a good one because Conor McGregor, love him or hate him, retired or not, he will probably get the winner of Khabib versus Justin. And so that, you know, if that fight's happening in September, then I see the Conor one in December, I guess. Nobody's fighting outside of those three until next, like April or something like that, before Khabib, you know, observes Ramadan again. So yeah, I would say guys like Tony and Dustin would need to take one more fight. But to be fair, Tony was just in a war, so was Dustin. I'll watch them at the end of the year. I'm good with that. And I guess maybe the winner does get a shot. Do the Islam Makhachevs and Charles Oliveiras of the world, you know, do they have a problem with that? Maybe, you know, but it's just a stacked division. And again, Conor fucks things up because he's uber popular and famous and rich and an amazing pull. And to be fair, an amazing fighter too. All right, Mike Perry defeated Mickey Gall, 29-28, 29-28, 29-28, all the way across. And, you know, it was entertaining. I hate to be cruel, but I just think Gall is, I don't think he's UFC caliber, other than if you want to give him a contract and keep him busy, you need those guys from 20 to 50, meaning their ranking. And I don't know where he is. I don't know if he's 21 or 49 or 50. But you need those guys for cards, and their tests for veterans that are falling, their tests for young guys that are coming up. But I don't know that he's a contender. He did look good for a while with the stand-up. You know, he actually hurt Mike Perry. But on the ground, like, for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, like, against Perry, who's kind of stiff, like, I don't know, he was getting mounted kind of easily, you know what I mean? Like, Perry had some really, really nice slips, you know. He'd go from taking him down to slicing to, you know, in the half guard and then getting the full mount, and his technique looked pretty nice. And I don't know, Perry doesn't strike me as a guy that should be doing that to somebody that's supposedly pretty decorated on the ground.
I actually, my problem with Mickey Gall, I don't even know if it's a problem, but he, to me, may not win a fight, but when he loses, I think he shows like some sort of improvement in his game. So I thought that was a pretty decent Mickey Gall. It's just that Mike Perry was out of his mind that night. I thought he fought a great, believe it or not, tactically, I thought he was aggressive when he needed to be, Mike Perry. I thought he chilled when he needed to be. I thought he fought very smart. That was probably a very tough Mike Perry to fight that night. Mickey Gall lost and at times wasn't looking good, but I thought he did some things that improved.
He still looks like a fighter, though, that where the energy meter goes down, like in the Diego fight, in this fight. You know, he basically, if he's not going to finish you, then he needs to win the first two rounds. He's not going to win a round three, you know. Now, we've had him in studio. He's a really cool cat. I can see why the UFC likes him, because he did what they asked. At Dana White looking for a fight, he won. He put himself out there, and then he started asking for fights, winning fights. He beat the right guys along the way, including, you know, Sage Northcutt, and he was always demanding his matchup. The person was always willing to fight. But I think he's just run into, you know, Perry's probably at the bottom of the top 20. And if you're not going to get past him, I just don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, because the other guys are just a little bit more complete. Now, you're right. Maybe we should spend some time on Perry. Just looked pretty damn good. Like, I mean, for a guy that's coming in for with kind of no camp, he's moving from one state to the next.
What he's only out to cornerman prove.
Was a corner woman, you know, and yeah.
I mean, that had the makings of being a disaster, right? Because he's out to prove that sometimes these coaches don't know what they're talking about, and they're trying to make him do things that he doesn't want to do. Usually, anytime you hear that from an athlete, eventually they go, oh, man, I was just immature. I was wrong. These guys have been in the game for a long time. I should have listened. He was right in everything he said. Like, he actually came. That was one of his best fights, I thought. So, but can you do that every fight? Probably not. I mean, there is something to having those extra voices in your head telling you, don't forget to look for this. Don't do, you know, push yourself here. So I don't know, man. It's tough.
But he shouldn't be getting outstruck by Mickey Gall either.
Probably, yeah.
Early on. True. I mean, and then he grabs the mic and he's got these tax problems. You can just tell, like, he's unique. Seems like a fun guy to paint the town pink with in Vegas. Some blackjack, the strip club. Probably a street fight, you know, it'd be a fun night. But
he's described the Tasmanian devil.
I think he just needs to get a little bit of the act together. Like, you know, he's admitting it, man. This just came out of his words. $100,000 in taxes. And what you mean you give it to me and then you ask for it back? Well, that's just life, dog. You know, straighten that out. Get to your camp. Figure things out. I mean, there's just not too many guys that did it their way. You ain't Frank Sinatra. You know what I mean? Like, get your coaches, do trust in them a little bit. And it's not like Jackson Wink got lucky. I mean, they've proved it over and over. They usually can come up with some good game plans for you to succeed with.
I saw some people reaching out to him, which I thought was kind of cool. Coaches and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I think Dean Thomas was one of them, I thought he said. I think maybe he just needs one guy. You know, almost like when you look at Edmund and Ronda, their relationship, where Edmund just didn't have that big of a stable. He did boxing and all that, but just MMA-wise, he had two or three. I think maybe Mike Perry needs something like that.
All right. Maurice Greene defeated John Volante. Man, John Volante had him, goes. He was winning the fight towards the end, and you know, Green was a big favorite. All the sharps I talked to had Green. Green submitted him via arm triangle choke from the bottom. But John Volante kind of was cruising to the finish line. He would have won that fight if I'm not mistaken. In fact, I think I can find out the judges' scorecards, even though it didn't go all the to the distance. Here we go.
That's, I mean, the thing. What
do you think of the fight?
Well, I mean, that's the thing about Volante, is like, he's always going to give you a tough fight. He is not an easy team on the schedule, right? When the schedule comes out, you don't look at him and go, oh, that should be, like, you're in for a battle. Mm-hmm. It's just, he has, you know who he reminds me of a little bit? Of Cub Swanson. Where, even in losses, Cub usually looked pretty good, but there were just these little mistakes here and there that probably cost him a few fights, and I feel like Volante's one of those guys where just tactically, every now and again here, he makes the wrong choice and he loses a fight because of it. It's hard for him to get on streaks and stuff like that. But I think Volante's a tough fighter. I think he can be talented. It's just, I bet you, if you're a gambler and you bet on him a lot, he's probably stung you quite a bit.
I'll tell you who stung me is Luis Pena.
Luis Pena stung you?
Yeah. Like, if I bet on him, I lose. If I bet against him, I lose.
Yeah, everybody's got that guy.
I can't figure that guy out.
That's my Donald Cerrone.
So it turns out Green was winning 10-9 on both cards. But I know Volante had hurt him and was starting to turn it on. So I guess maybe I thought, okay, he could finish him. I don't know. Maybe it was closer than I thought. I don't know. But anyway, Volante's on top. And, you know what? Yeah, now I remember. Yeah, he was pounding him. He hurt him. I remember even Bisping said, wow, credit to Green, because a lot of guys would have been out. I mean, Vellante was, you know, he hurt him on the feet and with the ground and pound.
That came close to a stoppage.
So then he's on top, and then all of a sudden he got basically, to me it looked like the arm triangle from the bottom. What did they label it here on the finish? Yeah, arm triangle choke. It was from the bottom. But I thought the guy said Ezekiel choke, which is the one Olenek does. He's got, you know, he's 6'7", so he's got long limbs. So, yeah, he was able to just get a good grip from the bottom. Now, that said, Vellante was also huffing and puffing and maybe just couldn't catch his win. And he gave up, man. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Vellante didn't look good at heavyweight. I mean, he hits hard. He kicks his hard. I think he would be great if there was like that cruiserweight, maybe 225 or something. But at 205, maybe he just depletes himself too much. And at you know, he came in like at 255?
No.
That just seems like a lot. Like, all right, I get it. 205 is not for you, but come in at 235 or 240. Like, he had a little bit of a belly going. And anyway, Green, he got emotional. He had lost two straight. And so he said, hey, man, I needed this one. Remember, he's from that Minnesota area, so things were tough.
Brock Larson guy.
Yeah, and he's relocating, and he needed this one, he said. Okay, Brendan Allen versus Kyle Daukaus. That was fun. I bet Allen, and I thought my goose was cooked there for a second because Daukaus started to make a little bit of a comeback, but Brendan Allen gets the decision win.
Good fight.
Yeah, Takashi Sato made quick work of Jason Witt. Round one finished in 48 seconds. Julian Arosa at Extreme Couture defeated Sean Woodson. Man, Arosa also worked the body.
That gym has been really busy.
They have.
If you go to their pro practice, I bet you a good amount of those guys have fought in the last, I don't know, six
Gustavo,
months or something like
Justin,
that.
Justin, Arosa, Max Ige. Used to be there, and now is at Drysdale's.
What's the girl with the purple hair?
Gina Mazzani.
She's
got another look, yeah.
There's been quite a few.
Yeah, that's five right there. Kama, Mikey Patolo.
No.
Kama Worthy defeated Luis Pena. And that was a big upset. So was Sean Woodson. But I think Sean Woodson was even bigger. I think Sean Woodson was like minus 500. Luis Pena, look. I don't want to talk about it too much because I'll probably just be pissed because he cost me so many parlays. But he lost to Conor Worthy. Conor Worthy looked good, though.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, on the ground, that was supposed to be Luis Pena's game. And at times, he looked good. But guess what? He got submitted via the guillotine choke. The choke looked nice, too. So,
did you see him apologizing to Ben Askren?
Who?
Luis Pena.
Why?
He's one of those kids that's got the big hair, so that's one of Ben Askren's kids. Have you ever seen that?
No, yeah, a little
it's like
bit.
Six of them. Chase Hooper, I can't remember.
He was really apologizing?
Well, he tweeted, like, sorry, Dad, or something like that. He said, like, you'll get him next time, son, or something like that.
Tanner Bozer defeated Felipe Lanz. That was a vicious KO. And then a nice call-out of Maurice Greene.
Yeah.
And Maurice Greene reciprocated.
Mm-hmm.
So, at first, he was just catching his breath, and then next thing you know, he said, listen, man, we had a talk at the pool, and you ducked me once before. Let's do it. Let's do it on Yaz Island. So we'll see. Kay Hansen defeated Jin Yu Fry, and somebody won 37,000, 39,000. Somebody bet.
Yeah.
Did you see them? Well, they saw each other at the airport and took a picture.
No, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, I thought it was an anonymous young person kid for the longest time, right?
Well, I guess at the time it was, but maybe he admitted it to her or something, or.
Huh.
When he saw her, but this was at the airport going home, and he had a mask on, but to me it looked like maybe like a 30-year-old black guy, light skinned, so I can't tell for sure, but he had, like, if I had to guess, a little bit of a Versace swag, like a nice chain, and so it looked like he was a baller a little bit. Yusuf Zalal defeated Jordan Griffin. I lost
that
on that
fun,
one too.
Fun fight too.
But Griffin fought, you know. Hey, if you fight, then I'm not going to hate too much. But this fight card had some upsets, man. Some big, big upsets. And remember, if the dogs win, all you need is like four or five of them. You'll have a good night. So out of 11 fights, let me see. He was a favorite. He was a favorite. He was a favorite. He was a favorite. Yeah, early on, Sada was a favorite. Erosa was a So on the main card, favorites went 5-1. But Erosa was such a big dog, he may have even things out alone. Then Worthy won. Bozé and Linz was about to pick him. Hansen, yeah. Zolo. Anyway, fighters, bonuses. Fight of the night, Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. Performances of the night, Julian Erosa and Kay Hansen. So I suppose Worthy's probably going, what about me?
Yeah, Julian puts in his time. I'm happy.
Maurice for Green or Sato, or they're going, what about me? But yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, I see that guy a lot. I see him a lot, and he's there and he's working. And, you know, this is post UFC cut as well that I've seen him in there. You know, a lot of times, if you've been in the UFC and it don't work out, I wouldn't be shocked if you go, I'm gone. You know, like, I guess if you go to another promotion and give it a run there too. But I don't remember hearing Erosa landed at Bellator or PFL or anything. So I guess he was hanging out, hope to maybe make it back to UFC. Who knows? But he won. He won, folks. And he got a bonus, just like Justin Jane. So good stuff for them. The gate, zero. Attendance, zero. I caught on, Goes. I think you have some inside info, so I caught on and looked it up, and I think I know what your stats are here, or who your contacts are, your sources are. So now we get a week off before they go to Yas Island. Is there anything you wanted to say about any of these fights?
I thought overall the card was a lot of fun, and what I thought was what was even cooler is if you look at all the celebrities and sports figures that were watching this card, I thought that was really cool, and I don't know. Hopefully they stick around once sports come back, because really there's nothing like fight night. I mean, that whole day is just so much fun. One fight after another, after another, after another.
Yeah, I agree. And I saw a lot of those tweets. I'm glad they're doing it. Hopefully they keep that up. They'll show some media, they'll show some fighters, and then they'll show the celebrities that are chiming in here and there. And it was a pretty impressive list. Okay, so some good stuff on MMA Junkie. Check it out, folks. A lot of the writers are already, you know, they're summarizing what might be next for Hooker, what might be next for Dustin Poirier. How did the newbies, you know, how did the new fighters do? The Reebok distribution money, how's that working out? What about the call-outs? Are they likely to get who they want, these fighters that are calling out Vegas? The rookie report, that's what I wanted to call one of the pieces that came out, grading the newcomers in Las Vegas. Of course, there's Twitter reactions, things like that. The bonuses, I already told you those. And of course, you know, all the different little results there, accompanied by some video highlights. Cole Coffee was in attendance, doing that stuff. Also, the staff picks is pretty popular. You can go in there and see how you did compared to others.
I think you might have done all right.
Did I?
From what I remember.
Let me see.
I thought when you turned yours in, I think you might have done okay.
I had Poirier, Perry, Allen, and Green. So I went 4-0. How'd you do? You have Poirier, Perry, Allen, and Green. Yeah, you had the same. Let's see how the leaders did.
But that's kind of like expected of me, you know?
No. Nolan King, he went 4-0. And Farah Hanoun, she had Dan Hooker and Mickey Gall. So she's in second place, and she was behind by one to Nolan. So she's behind by three. Now, Dan Tom was behind both of them, one to Farah and two to Nolan. He had Poirier, Perry. He went 4-0. So he's gonna slip by Farah for second place, and then you get to Mike Bond, and who knows, but we have three people that have never won it at the top. All the former champions, like Mike Bond, he's in fourth going into it. Simon Head, he's in sixth. Ken Hathaway is in ninth. Goes Garcia is in 10th, and then Ben Folks and Dan Stupp were the other two winners, right? They're no longer with us. Anyhow, all right, folks, listen, on Wednesday,
with the site. With the site,
yeah, they they're still on planet Earth. Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. We'll be back with MMA Junkie Radio on Sportscaster. Check us out over at sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. And that's a show that goes an hour long, and you can catch us doing video and interviewing guests. We've had Ray Longo, Calvin Cater, and Big John McCarthy these past 3 weeks. So hopefully we'll have a guest on, and then we'll start to dive deep a little bit into some of the latest news. Remember, Monday's a pretty busy day with a lot of the recap shows and post-fight interviews, and then Tuesday's the big matchmaker meeting that the UFC has. So a lot of times there's a lot to discuss on a Wednesday, and then we're back Thursday as well for our second Junkie Radio show that's in the podcast form, just audio, no video, here on Junkie. And then you can follow Goze on Twitter at the Goze, T-H-E-G-O-Z-E. The show is at MMA Junkie Radio, and I'm at MMA Junkie George. And folks, have a good day. Have a good night, I should say, because this is a Sunday night edition. Have a nice week, and we'll see you all soon. In the meantime, go out there and be a champion.